This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This Feeding Time podcast is brought to you by Plan B, your go-to joint for a quick fix of great grub and wicked coffee, a new perspective to fuss-free dining. This is BFM 89.9. On today's installment of Feeding Time, I'll be talking to John Chen from Kajang Hot Pepper Soup Restaurant about his delicious cuisine.
In any restaurant business, if the restaurant business is so reliant on hired cooks, what happens if the cook decides to leave?
Yes, you held ransom, so yeah. This is a good way to do it.
Correct.
Later on, he'll be sharing his recipe for his unique three-season steamed egg omelette.
We use that broth for a few items, and one of them is actually for our steam egg.
And that flavors the egg naturally already. Just normal white.
Yes, we don't use normal water.
But first up, here's what I've been eating around town this week. This week, it's all about Thai food, and we're talking first up about Nong and Jimmy Thai Barbecue Seafood, a seafood institution, if you know it. It was originally located in Taman Cahaya and has since moved recently in May to a capacious new setting in Kampung Bahru. And that's also a testament to their success, and it's been well-deserved, because if you haven't been to this crab institution, be forewarned that it gets seriously packed out come mealtimes, and that's because the food there is fantastic. The wait is well worth it, because once you get your hands on their crabs, one just won't curb the cravings. The signature charcoal grilled crabs are perfect for diners who like their crabs firm, fleshy, and more than a vestige of smoke. But you should be aware that many other gems await on the menu as well. Seafood firmly takes center stage, of course, at Nong and Jimmy, and rightfully so. But crabs aside, you must try the steamed clams, prawns, and squid, which is imbued with delightful sweetness, or even the classic tom yum seafood soup, which is as fiery as it is vivacious. I would also advise you to try the somtam, where the pecan papaya salad has as its dance companions chilled noodles, beautifully tender squid, prawns, and crispy chicken wings. Thailand's answer to our nasi ulam is the belacan fried rice, and the belacan fried rice platter at Nong and Jimmy is a sterling choice, because it's served with an impressive array of prawns, omelette strips, meat, chilies, cucumber, coriander, and green papaya. All you have to do is jumble it all up, and the resulting flavors are complex and utterly addictive. Nong and Jimmy's menu is also brimming over with Thai staples like Thai-style steamed fish, the min sa kui, a very Moorish dish of fluffy fritters like our yu cha kui, that are served with kaya. I'd only offer one piece of advice when thinking of dining at Nong and Jimmy, and that's to go with a large group so you can have a very good selection of dishes to try. It'll be well worth the effort, and you'll wonder why you hadn't thought of it sooner. Nong and Jimmy's Thai Barbecue Seafood is located at 298 C for Charlie, Jalan 15 in Kampung Bahru Ampang in Selangor, and it's open for lunch daily from noon to 2:30 and for dinner nightly from 5:30 to 11:30. And the phone number there is 016-7568-058 or 016-6928-112. Thai street food has also been enjoying a resurgence of sorts, with new outlets like Street Thai opening to reinvigorate jaded palates. A fistful of chefs from Bangkok, Chiang Rai, Chonburi, Korat and Pattaya have been brought by this company to this impressive venue, and each has its own speciality. So when you order salad, you're getting a salad from a salad master. When you're getting noodles, you're getting it from a skilled noodle maker. This is Thai street food at its most exuberant, and it promises to be something for absolutely everyone. The classic somtam is also well represented here, as it was with Nong and Jimmy. And except here at Street Thai, there are more than 6 varieties to choose from. And since salted egg is apparently the must-have ingredient du jour, try that version with salted egg, or opt for the classic, which comes doused with an anchovy sauce. There's also a kanom jin with fish curry, and here, instead of having them separately, the ingredients are served all together, but it yields a textural and flavor orgy. There's also beef noodles with tender braised slices of meat, beef balls, and a lilting broth with hints of sweetness. Highly recommended is the barbecue Australian beef strip loin, which is exquisitely prepared and is a delightful mouthful that demands for more. Classic pad kapow is also represented here for the vegetarians, and the mushrooms are tousled with egg tofu and fried holy basil. It's succinct evidence that vegetarian food doesn't have to be bland or beige. Seafood selections include the fresh, flaky tilapia with vegetables and herbs. There's also proteins like the Thai-style barbecue chicken, mammoth poached freshwater prawns with a tangy dipping sauce, all made a la minute when you order it to ensure optimum freshness and flavor. If you come with a big enough group or big enough appetites, don't eschew the Tom Yum Wow. It's a massive hot pot of instant noodles with fish, squid, prawns, fish balls, crab sticks, enoki, mushrooms, eggs, vegetables, and it's meant for sharing amongst three diners. If you still have room, wrap up your meal with the fried fritters. There's a selection of banana, pumpkin, taro, and sweet potatoes. They're truly yummalicious. Or even the classic coconut rice custard. Every Friday night, there's a live band, so there's an even more compelling reason to go and visit and then hang out afterwards. Street Thai is located at 100 G001 The School by Jaya Wan at 72A Jalan University, Petaling Jaya. It's open daily from 11:30 a.m. to 10 p.m. and the phone number there is 03-7496-1297 or 012-907-3581. With me today, John Chen from Kajang Hot Pepper Soup. Now, I'm gonna make an admittance on air because Kajang Hot Pepper Soup is one of my top favorite restaurants in Kuala Lumpur at the moment. So that admission is made. You know that I'm going to be quite going to tear you to pieces and find out what it is about your food that makes it so special.
Right.
Now, you haven't always been in the restaurant business, John.
No, I've not. I've only been in the restaurant business for the past 3 years.
Okay. And prior to that?
Prior to that, I was in the executive search industry for 14 years. And prior to the executive search industry, I was in advertising for another 14 years.
But this is not your first foray into the F&B industry, is it? Because you've been a partnership.
Yes, I was a partnership with a Japanese restaurant called Yamamomo, which is in the same location. That restaurant lasted for 2 years. Then at the end of 2 years, my partner decided that they wanted to sell out. So I bought over their shares and I converted it to Kajang Hot Pepper Soup.
Now, how did you find this Kajang Hot Pepper Soup concept?
The first Kajang Hot Pepper Soup restaurant is actually in Bandar Puchong Jaya. And that restaurant belongs to a very good friend of mine.
Right.
Also an advertising guy. So when we were towards the end of the Japanese restaurant, I was looking for new concept, new things to try out. I decided to tie up with him. The Bandar Puchong Jaya, the hot pepper soup. And that was when the whole concept like, changed from Japanese to Chinese to Kajang hot pepper soup.
I have to say, when I first stumbled across your restaurant, the one main deterrent that really I didn't want to go into the restaurant because of the name. Because Kajang hot pepper soup, I was kind of like, you know, it didn't jump out to me because
right.
I guess it just sounded like, what's a hot pepper, you know? But it's really deceptive because once you're in, the dishes are just fantastic. Yeah. And actually, now one of my favorite things is the hot pepper soup.
Thank you.
Is it a patented dish from the other restaurant?
It's not a patented dish. In fact, Kajang is famous for two things. Most famous is the Kajang satay. They are also famous for their hot pepper soup, especially in Sungai Chor in Kajang. That's where it originated from.
That's what I meant by patented. It's from it's like a Kajang speciality,
yes,
right?
Yes, just like Kajang satay. Yeah.
Right. That one or I don't understand.
Penang
I really don't get the Kajang satay, right?
Yeah. Or Penang laksa.
Okay. So when you compare your Kajang hot pepper soup to the Kajang hot pepper soups around Kajang, how do you think you rate?
Okay. I've actually done a little bit of changes to the recipe because when I first started my Kajang hot pepper soup in Bandar Utama Center Point, some of the patrons told me that they found it too spicy, too hot. So what I've done is I've actually toned down on the spiciness for the PJ folks.
Are you serious? Because
yes.
It's pretty peppery.
Yes. If you want even more peppery, let me know. I can make it even peppery. Or you
I
want
can...
it less peppery, I can also make it less peppery.
I don't think I can go any more peppery than that.
Yeah.
I mean, that really clears your nostrils and
yes,
it's a really good pick-me-up.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just go back to your, talking about restaurants and I'm quite interested before we go into the food aspect of it. You've had an experience being a partner in another food business and now you're branched out on your own. How does it compare? I mean, like, you know, having your own, being your own boss as opposed to having to answer to other partners.
Well, the first thing, it gives me a lot more freedom to do what I want because it's my money, my investment. whatever decision is only between me and my wife because this restaurant is owned by both me and my wife and we both work there. We are both there every day. you know, whenever it's open. We close on Mondays, so other days both of us are there.
And you mentioned that you also are the chef now, cooking.
Yes.
Now, was this a skill you previously already owned, or have you just recently acquired this ability to cook?
Okay, I'm a Hainanese. And everyone have this perception that Hainanese are supposed to be good cooks. They can cook. I've been cooking at home. I've been doing a lot of home cooking, but not on a commercial basis. This is my first foray into a commercial restaurant. And it's quite different. Cooking at home versus cooking for a restaurant requires different skills, different preps. You know, you have to really, really prep the food in advance for a restaurant business. Whereas at home, I can spend 3 hours boiling one soup, and everybody is like waiting, it's okay, you know. But in the restaurant, the food has to be served within 10 minutes. The food has to be cooked within 10 minutes. Yeah. You cannot wait for 3 hours. Nobody's going to do that. Yeah.
And you mentioned just now to me off the air that this was actually your retirement option.
Yes, it is.
It's a very strange choice of retirement option, because usually when people retire, they go for something that's easy, that's laid back, and that affords them more time to go and indulge in their hobbies like golf, as you mentioned. A restaurant is hardly that.
Well, it was an opportunity which I saw. The Japanese restaurant, after about 2 years, it wasn't very successful. And I have already pumped in a lot of money into that restaurant. I have not taken a single cent out. So when my partners decided that they wanted out, I decided that, hey, I have this opportunity. I can take over the business. I can change the concept, and I give it another shot.
And try and recoup your losses.
Try and recoup
funds.
My losses. Yes, try and recoup at least a little bit back on my
losses.
Well,
I hope you already have done that, because I can see the restaurant is always very full.
Yes, I've recuperated a little bit, not all of it yet, you know. So my plan is probably to recoup it within the next 2 years.
Oh, you'll get there a lot sooner, I'm pretty sure.
I hope so.
But one of the other things you also mentioned was that it's quite stressful, because it's not like say, far from being a retirement plan, owning a restaurant, you have to be so hands-on. You have to be there all the time.
Yes.
Otherwise, the staff really take advantage of you.
Exactly, yes.
Have you found that to be the case?
Yes. Well, there are a couple of areas that we have to micromanage. Number one is the quality of the food. The quality of food. I'm in the kitchen every day. I monitor what my boys are doing. Then I monitor the quantity of food they give. You know, if it's not enough, or sometimes they give too much, you know. I check on the QC, whether it's too salty, not salty enough, you know, things like that. You know.
On every dish that goes out?
Not every dish.
Just spot checks.
Spot checks, you know.
And do you have, like, in certain Western restaurants, there's a certain flowchart, or not a flowchart, but a systems thing for each dish, so they know that that's the standard that they have to follow?
Yes. Well, I have actually documented my dishes, because I look at this business long term. I want to be able to scale it up to the second outlet, the third outlet. So I'm started to document down a lot of my dishes and how it's to be prepared. Yeah.
But you are partners with the original Kajang Hot Pepper Soup man. And you're good friends with him, and
yes,
you're both partners in this outlet, but he is his own independent partner in his original outlet. Now, if you're going to roll out more outlets, how would that impact on the actual branding?
It won't impact, because he has minority shares in mind. You know, so if I open the second outlet, obviously I'll be talking to him. You know, we'll work something out. Yeah.
You know, it's really nice to see a partnership where it's so open. Like you mentioned earlier on that if you create a new dish for this restaurant that's not on the original, you'll share it with him, and ditto that he'll do it the same with you.
That's right.
You know, I think that's why a lot of partnerships tend to fail, because there is that sense of, you know, my property, your property, my turf, your turf.
That's right.
And that is a recipe for disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to see that you and your friends.
I've known him for more than 20 over years, almost 30 years. And he, like I said, he was also an advertising guy. That's where I first met him, when we were both starting off in advertising. You know, so we've been friends all this while.
And he cooks as well?
He cooks as well, but he spends more time on the service side. Because he runs that restaurant together with his wife, and I run this restaurant with my wife.
So she's front of house and you're back of house.
That's right. She takes care of service, I take care of kitchen.
That's pretty good. I don't see your retirement coming anytime soon, I'm sorry to say it, John.
I didn't expect my retirement plan to be so busy, you know. I actually wanted to be able to spend more time to play golf, to ride my motorbike, you know. I wanted to travel, you know, ride my bike to Thailand, to China, Myanmar, Laos, you know. But right now, I just don't have the time, because in this business, you have to micromanage. You have to be in charge of purchasing. Like me and my wife, we go to the market every day to buy the vegetables.
Every day.
We go to the market to buy the vegetables. We go to a sundry shop to buy the onions, the garlics, you know, and all the things that our restaurant needs.
Why don't you get a supplier to deliver it to you?
We do have suppliers. Some of the items, like for example, the pork is supplied. They deliver to our restaurant. The chicken is delivered. You know, the fish is delivered. But some of the things like the vegetables, we find it faster for us to go there and just buy it and bring it back.
But is it not cheaper when you get it wholesale from a you know, the person who grows?
Not really. We actually have a supplier for vegetables too that we were using during the Japanese restaurant days. And we found that the price that they charge to us versus the price that I get when I go to market is lower.
Right.
It's lower. Because I get it at wholesale price too. I buy in quantity. I buy the beans, I buy the cabbage, I buy by 5 kg, 10 kg. It's not like when
right,
you go to
right,
a market,
exactly,
you just buy a bunch.
Not exactly 3 plastic bags. Yes.
Yeah, it's not.
Okay. So, obviously, you're not F&B per se, but now you're fully immersed in it. You've jumped in clothing and all into the deep end. Mm-hmm. And you're actually cooking as well.
Mm-hmm.
For anyone who's thinking of getting into the business, what is one lesson that you have learned, good or bad, that you think, okay, if I ever open another restaurant or when I open another restaurant, I better not forget that?
Okay, the first thing you must always remember is that for me, I always tell myself, what I don't know, I can learn. I don't know commercial cooking, but I can learn. I'm willing to learn, you know. My wife finds it very strange that at nighttime, when I have a certain dish in my mind, I want to try and cook this dish. At night, in bed, I'm on the phone, I'm going through YouTube, scrolling, checking on YouTube how they cook this dish. I go to the blogs, the food blogs. I look for recipes, you know, and then I go to the kitchen. I experiment. For one new dish, it will take me at least sometimes about 10 experimentation before I get it right, before I finally say, okay, this is good enough for me to sell.
That's great. I love the fact that you're so enthusiastic and so
keen. You have to be, yeah.
And I think that's exactly what you say. You have to have an open mind. If you don't have an open mind,
it's
never
attitude,
going to progress.
Yes. It's attitude. You have to tell yourself, okay, I'm in this business now. No. If I want to remain in this business and I want to be successful in this business, I have to learn about it.
Well,
I have to
said.
Learn about everything,
yes,
including the kitchen, you know, like the cooking. In any restaurant business, if the restaurant business is so reliant on hired cooks, what happens if the cook decides to leave?
Yes, you held ransom, so
yeah,
this is a good way to do it.
Correct.
Well said. Next up, John is going to be talking about the amazing food that they serve at Kajang Hot Pepper Soup. This is Feeding Time with Faye on BFM 89.9. Awesome new food like the Malaysian corned beef rendang waffle witch and Christie's crunchy kale salad at Plan B, your new local. You'll definitely not find these anywhere else. You're listening to Feeding Time. I'm Fei Koo. With me, John Chen from the Kajang Hot Pepper Soup restaurant in Bandar Utama at Centre Point. Now, we've been talking about, obviously, the business aspect of things, and let's focus a little bit more on the food, which is where I'm sure everybody wants to hear. The hot pepper soup, that is quite startlingly good. I love the fact that you've got goji berries in there. There's a lot of meat and bones and a lot of things to chew on. But the soup itself is so nice and full-bodied, mm-hmm, and really especially useful when you feel you're coming down or you're tired. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of preparation, how many vats do you prepare every day? I mean, how do you estimate how much is going to be sold?
Okay, I boil my soup on a daily basis because it has to be fresh. And it takes about 3 hours to boil the soup. I boil one big
vat.
Yes, of it. That base soup is used not only for my Kajang hot pepper soup, it's also used for my bitter gourd soup. And I also use the broth for my other dishes, like for example, the steamed egg,
right,
the vegetables. I don't fry the vegetable with just water. I use the broth of my soup.
Is
so
this something you learned from your friend, or is something that you picked up by yourself and you went, hey, hang on, this is a good base?
That was picked up from my friend.
Okay.
From the first Kajang hot pepper soup restaurant in Bandar Puchong Jaya. Using that broth to cook all the other dishes was picked up from the first restaurant.
That's a fantastic idea, actually, because it's true, instead of using water and then supplementing it with flavorings or whatever,
mm-hmm, yes,
the broth itself will already enhance it no end and lift it without even the use of
that's
much
right,
salt.
Yes.
Which brings us to the topic I asked you off air just now, keen to probe whether you were, you know, one of those restaurants that used reliant on a lot of MSG, and you said you use very little.
Yes, use very little.
Why even use it at all if your broth is already so flavoursome and you can just use, say, some salt?
I don't use MSG for all my dishes. For a couple of the dishes, I do add a little bit of MSG just to bring the sweetness out.
Just to give it the umami, right?
Yeah, so just to bring a little bit of sweetness out. I also use sugar. The sugar also brings the taste out.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have the negativity of the MSG.
Yeah, I think everything in moderation and a little bit doesn't
Correct.
Hurt.
Yes.
And I actually think that MSG, to a certain extent, has been really vilified by the Western world.
That's right.
Because the reality is, if you can see huge populations of people, and some people are sensitive to it, like I am, mm-hmm. but a lot of people are not, and it doesn't really adversely, affect their health in such a huge way as they claim it, that it does.
Moderation is it's acceptable.
Moderation is key.
Yes.
Yeah. So your soup... You boil it for 3 hours.
Yes.
What are some of the base things that go into it to make it so tasty?
Okay.
Obviously the pepper.
We use the pork bone. We use chicken bones. We add in the soya beans and a couple of other ingredients to boil. And we boil the soup for at least minimum 3 hours to get the flavor out, to get the sweetness out. This is just a preparation, the first part of it. The second part of it is that when an order comes in for the pepper soup, let's say like yesterday you came, you ordered the pepper soup. So what happens is the cook will scoop the soup out and that's when we put in the
meats.
Goji
berries and stuff.
We put in, in my soup, we have 4 kinds of meats. We have got the pork belly, sliced pork belly. We've got the kampung chicken. We've got the pig stomach and also the liver. We use kampung chicken for one reason. It is sweeter. If I use a normal chicken, the sweetness of the soup doesn't come out.
No, we picked that out yesterday. When we were having the soup, it was like, hey, look at the chicken. Because you can see when it's kampung chicken. And we're like, this is kampung chicken. That's pretty good that he uses for his soup.
Yes. I've actually tried cooking it with a normal chicken because a normal chicken costs half the price of the kampung chicken. Okay. But the taste is just not right. Even the pork belly. I do not use a local pork belly. My pork belly is actually imported from Italy. The supplier gave me two choices. I tried the local pork belly and I found it to be very fat. There's way too much fat, very little meat. And the consistency of the taste wasn't there. Whereas the imported pork belly was not as fat as the local pork belly, but the taste was good. The texture was good.
So we're getting Italian pork in Chinese restaurant.
Yes.
That's pretty
awesome. A lot
of
people don't know that. No.
And in your fried, like for your pork belly dish as well,
yes.
is that also Italian
yes,
pork?
Yes, it's also the same pork.
That's
it's
why
a
the consistency
quality,
is different.
Better quality pork. Yes.
Yeah. Because one of my other favorite dishes at your restaurant, obviously, is a clay pot salted fish pork.
Hami fa lampo, salted fish
pork. Hami fa lampo. Yes. I didn't know that's what it's called, but the pork texture, like you said, it's a completely different texture.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's fatty, but it's not excessively so you don't
Correct.
Feel like you've gone over the top in terms
of
eating
it. And the texture
of
that texture of the pork belly is nice. Yeah. It's not too hard, not too soft.
So how do you keep your costs down? I mean, when you're ordering things from Italy?
Well, the cost difference between the local pork belly versus the Italian pork belly is it's about 20% more. Not 100% more. It's about 20% more. So I figured that if I want my food to be really great tasting, I might as well invest in the better quality ingredients.
Exactly, that's exactly right. Mm.
It's just like, for example, you mentioned just now the hami fa lampo, the salted fish pork belly. I use mackerel fish. I use a salted mackerel fish.
Oh.
And that's a good quality salted fish. Yeah.
That's very reassuring to know. I was had a little bit of trepidation that when I invited you on the show, I thought, gee, I hope the skeletons don't come out of the closet and then I lose my taste for the kacang hot pepper soup restaurant. But I am now fully reassured to know that my enthusiasm for it is justified. Now, some of the other dishes that you have, they're quite unusual. They're not really the standard Chinese restaurant, run-of-the-mill type dishes, although they look like it, it's slightly different.
Yeah.
Was that an intentional thing?
Yes, a couple of the dishes, I got the inspiration to prepare this from some of my trips overseas. Like, for example, the crispy pork belly. The crispy pork belly, I got the inspiration was from my trips to Bangkok. The street food, the hawker peddlers by the roadside, they have a lot of meats. And one of my favorite meats is the crispy pork belly. So a couple of times when I went to Bangkok, I'll look at and see how they prepare this. What is the ingredient that goes into there? And one of the bottle of sauces I saw in this push cart was a mei gui jiu, rose wine. They use rose wine for the marination.
Oh.
So I've actually recreated
adopted it,
that.
Yes.
Kind of recreated that and added a couple more of my own ingredients to create this dish.
Do you find that when you look at other people's food and then you try and recreate it, is it very tough for you, or do you find you've developed quite a knack for it?
I don't find it tough. I find it interesting. I find it interesting because I'm experimenting. I enjoy doing that.
So for you, what's a couple of the new dishes that you've added to this restaurant that's not on the original Kajang hot pepper soup restaurant that you really think everybody should try when they go?
Well, the crispy pork belly is one of them. The other one is the deep fried squid, deep fried sotong.
With the salted egg?
Not the salted egg. The salted egg is also an interesting dish, but I created another one, which was the deep fried sotong. I got that inspiration for my trips to Vietnam in Ho Chi Minh. A lot of restaurants, they serve this deep fried sotong.
A whole big squid is sliced up.
Yes, the whole squid. You cook, you deep fry the whole squid.
So what's so special about this dish for you?
Well, that dish has become very, very popular since I introduced it probably about 3 months ago. What they like was the texture. You have to deep fry this sotong at maximum 180 degrees, all right? And you do not deep fry it for more than 1.5 minutes.
Because otherwise it becomes chewy, right?
Yes, it becomes chewy. Yeah. So you got to look at the size. If it is a bigger one, about 1.5 minutes. If it's a smaller one, maybe 1 minute. So you have to also use your own judgment.
And the other dish that I'm going to talk to you about, which I'm going to ask you for the recipe to share with the listeners afterwards, is your three-season steam omelette.
Yes.
Now that one, I'm sorry, I've never really been crazy about century egg or salted egg last time, you know, and even egg omelette, you know, you eat it when you're a kid and you're like, oh, that thing again. But yours, I go gaga over. I can eat the whole thing by myself because it's so smooth and so velvety.
Almost
and like
silk. Chawanmushi, yeah?
It's like chawan mushi, but flat, in a flat plate.
Yes.
Now, how do you get that kind of consistency?
Okay, that is actually a very simple dish to make. The first, when I call it the three season is because it contains three different kind of eggs. Chicken egg, which is the base, you know. We have also got the salted egg, and we also got the quail's egg.
Oh, quail's egg?
Yes.
Not the century egg?
It's a century egg from quail. So what we do is we prepare this, the salted egg and the quail egg, we cook it separately. So that has to be prepared earlier. The way we make the egg itself, the omelette, the steam omelette itself, is we beat up, let's say for example, we use two eggs, two chicken eggs. And for the steam, the omelette, we use two, for the small size, we use two eggs, and then we add in a special broth. The broth is actually our soup. I mentioned to you just now, we boil daily a big container of soup. We use that broth for a few items, and one of them is actually for our steam egg.
And that flavors the egg naturally already.
White. Yes, we don't use normal water.
So if someone is making a really good stock at home that has a lot of bones and goodness in it, they could theoretically use that stock as the base for their omelette as well.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. So you take the stock, you've got two eggs.
You got two eggs. The ratio is... two eggs, I'll add probably about 2 bowls or 2.5 bowls of my broth, and then beat it up. Beat it up until it is consistent. Then I will steam it for about 10 minutes. The steamer has to be really hot at that time.
Wait till the steamer gets really hot before you put the egg mixture in.
Yes, the water is boiling. You put it in for 10 minutes. Yeah. And don't open the cover.
Don't be tempted to cheat and look, right?
Right. So once, after 10 minutes, you can open up, when you open up a container, the first thing I would normally do is I'll just shake the plate a little bit to see the consistency. It has to be soft. It has to be soft enough, you know. Then only I take it out, and that's when I put in the salted egg and the century egg on top of it.
And your garlic. Don't forget the fried garlic.
That's an
important part of it.
Yes, and I also add in soya sauce. Now, the soya sauce that I use at my restaurant is, again, my own recipe. I recook the soya sauce. You are not going to be able to get that same taste in any other restaurant. I recook my soya sauce. What I do is I add in water. I add in other ingredients. I put in sarai and I boil it and reboil it again.
Right. That's why your sauce tastes so different.
And I use that same soya sauce for my steamed fish.
I'm gonna have to bug your kitchen and I don't know or bribe you to give me some lessons because it's compelling.
No problem.
It's very compelling the way you've journeyed and the way you've evolved and experimented because the flavors that you've come up with are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you so much for sharing that egg recipe with us. You can try it at home or you can go to Kajang Hot Pepper Soup. Get the real thing.
Come and try it at my
John
restaurant.
Let John cook for you. Kajang Hot Pepper Soup is located at the first floor. on the McDonald's side in the new wing of Centrepoint in Bandar Utama. The phone number there is
7733-1220.
And you're open for lunch and dinner every day.
Yes, for lunch we open from 11:30. Our last call is at 2:30. We close at 3, and we reopen again at 6. Our last call is 9:30. We close at 10. We are closed on Mondays, so we operate from Tuesdays till Sundays.
Fantastic. Well, you don't have to tell me to come to yours because you can't keep me away anyway. Thank you very much, John.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks to John Chen for his very delicious descriptions. If you want to find out what we're giving away this week, don't forget to follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/BFMFeedingTime. Or follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Khoo. That's MISSKHOO. Till next Saturday, have yourselves a delicious week. This is Feeding Time with Faye on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.